Dan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our special guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And we're going to be talking about population control. Now, of course, people are not quite sure what you're talking about with population control, but what we're really talking about is that there really is an elite out there that hates humanity, that wants to limit the number of people in the world and eventually reduce the population and reduce it dramatically. And if you study their writings, you'll find out that these people have an agenda. They control the reins of government, and they have a program that they're implementing throughout the world to kill off the population in third world countries and here in the United States to market limit the number of births. And you do this many, many ways by fluoride. You do this by mercury and giving it to pregnant women because it'll induce miscarriages in a few of them, but much more of that, it'll affect ultimate fertility, and it'll have an impact on the mind of the child, but they don't care. You wouldn't think anybody would want to hurt children. There really are people who relish that idea. If there were not, we would not have aborted over 50 million children in America since 1973 in the last 33 years. Well, that is the background, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't you pick up the story here? This part two that's posted on the newswithviews.com. Go right ahead.
The word I use in terms of the title of population control, I want to remind the listeners, well, actually, this may be the first time I've talked to this audience about it, is I'm using population control in its broadest sense. So it's not just population elimination reduction, but actually control. So it is the elimination or reduction or limiting fertility rates and so on. But it's also controlling the population, which means the people who are already here, you want to control them as well. And so this is part two of the dialectics, Rockefellers and population control, showing how these things fit together. And part two begins with 1945, and the Rockefeller Foundation's medical director, his name was Alan Gregg. He began looking around for some institution that they could fund to put wartime psychology into a civilian society, and they wound up funding something called Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. The Psychiatric Institute had been around for a number of years, but this was the Institute of Human Relations that Tavistock was going to be about, and it was all part of this conditioning process. It was coming about. I had mentioned some of this in part one, how they wanted social control, the control of human behavior. That was their stated objective. Max Mason, their president, back in 1933, said that. And then the next entry I have is a few years later, 1950-51. This is more or less a chronology that I'm doing at this point, where the chairman of the Rockefeller Foundation, John Foster Dulles, he decided to take John D. Rockefeller III on a tour of third world countries, not just, you know, a nice little tourist trip, but actually to show him the need for eugenically controlling the growth of non-white populations. They thought that all of these poor people, Asians, Africans, and so forth, were just breeding too much, and that this was going to harm the world and the world's economy and business and so forth and so on. And to some extent, they actually, you know, in their sort of elitist mentality, thought they were doing these people a favor by weeding out the less fit, you know, that sort of survival of the fittest that came out of evolution and Darwinism. And so they would look at
this. Well, that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Here.
With energy costs on the rise and cooler weather around the corner, isn't it time to replace your home's windows? Custom replacement windows from Sears are low maintenance, tilt in easy for cleaning, and may also help reduce your energy costs. Add beauty to your home with custom replacement windows from Sears. Just call 1-800-393-8378 for a free in-home consultation. Call now and ask about our special financing terms. You can count on Sears for the quality materials and installation you have come to expect for over 100 years, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Call now for your free in-home consultation. Offer ends 12/30/06. Subject to applicant credit worthiness. License number available on request. Not available in all areas. See associate or ask your consultant for written limited warranty details. If it's time to replace your windows, call Sears now. 1-800-393-8378. Ask about our special financing terms. That's 1-800-393-8378.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
Are rising gas prices flattening your wallet? Try Royal Purple High Performance Motor Oil.
What? How's that?
Yes, independent tests by respected universities show Royal Purple reduces fuel consumption by as much as 5%. That means Royal Purple can deliver better gas mileage for a fatter wallet. Go to royalpurple.com for details. That's Royal Purple, the high performance motor oil that outperforms. Oil is oil. Don't kid yourself. Technology makes better oils possible, like Royal Purple. Royal Purple reduces friction and increases film strength. Go to royalpurple.com and you'll find independent test results from North Carolina and Oklahoma State. Not hype, just facts. What's in it for you? Superior protection, fewer oil changes, more horsepower, torque, and better gas mileage. Find Royal Purple at Napa, O'Reilly's, your local high-performance center, and royalpurple.com today.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. He's talking today about population control. In other words, controlling the populations. You pick the story up there, Dennis.
Sure. Basically, what happens is the chairman of the Rockefeller Foundation, John Foster Dulles, takes John D. III around to the third world countries. And what they do is say, well, we have to eugenically control the growth of these people. You know, they're having five, six, seven children and so on. And look at the impoverished condition. You know, it'd be merciful if they didn't have any more children, so we'll see what we can do about that. Notice they don't try to improve the economy of the country. They just want to control the growth of these non-white people coming around. And so the next year in 52, Rockefeller and Dulles formed the Population Council to fund population control measures. And during this period in the 50s, there's this young Harvard PhD named Henry Kissinger, who's just coming out of Harvard and starting to make a name for himself. And he's taken under the wing of Rockefeller, and they put him in their Rockefeller Brothers Fund. And he works there for a while, so that by the end of the 50s, they issue this small little book, but it's rather powerful. It's called The Mid-Century Challenge to U.S. Foreign Policy, and they're looking ahead. And they say in this publication, we cannot escape and indeed should welcome the task which history has imposed on us. This is the task of helping to shape a new world order in all its dimensions, spiritual, economic, political, and social, end quote. It goes on, but notice the elitist attitude. It's sort of like the old noblesse oblige. You know, my goodness, look at this. I'm born to the velvet, and the the purple, and, you know, I must lead these masses of poor ignoramuses because I have the best breeding and education. I mean, you can smell the sort of elite language coming out of this, how they know what's the best for the peons who are surrounding them. And so what you have is the next year, JFK is elected in 1960, and he puts into the State Department Dean Rusk, a Rhodes Scholar. And Rusk had been president of the Rockefeller Foundation previously, and he publishes something called Freedom from War. It's really a three-stage disarmament plan, and it talks about disbanding all national armies. That means ours, too, so that you only can preserve internal order. And all of this power is supposed to be transferred to the UN, the UN Peace Force. And so this is the way this chronology progresses, but don't look at this, if you look at newswithviews.com, as isolated incidents. Look at it as a sort of a progression. You have them funding Tavistock to manipulate people with psychology. Then you have them literally controlling non-whites, setting up an institution to fund the control of these people, then having this overarching effort that they say is just, you know, imposed on them by history. Yes, we accept the challenge, you know. And it's not just a small thing. It's spiritual, economic, political, and social. They're determined to control all this stuff. And in terms of the army, which will be used or not used for whatever purpose, they literally want to reduce the U.S. Army and shift all the attention to the UN. So this is the type of attitude they have. Now, in terms of the culture in general, what you find is a very radical change in American society. You have the Americans for Democratic Action, Students for a Democratic Society, various groups, you know, the hippie movement, do your own thing, and so forth. Free love, all this sort of stuff coming up in the 60s.
But isn't this actually being promoted by these same people? In other words, aren't they working through a lot of front groups to promote this, the change in sexual mores, because of their funding of the Kinsey report, which says, you know, certainly sexual aberration is perfectly normal, everybody's doing it. And so the things, organizations like the Rockefeller Foundation that funded the Kinsey Report were instrumental in beginning to change the moral and political outlook of the American people, and certainly religious, too, as well.
Absolutely. And in part one, I explained how they had the radio project, and part of that was at Princeton, and they funded a study of how radio could be used, in this case it was the War of the World, how the public would react to that. And it wasn't just, okay, here's some money, go study what the public's opinion was of this. This whole project was rather vast. They had Theodore Adorno was the musical director. He literally developed theories that were later used by the Beatles, sort of a fractious music that would disturb your psyche, that would cause a certain stimulation to you. And so in the 60s, it's absolutely true that this didn't come out of nowhere. You know, all of a sudden people just didn't start saying, hey, I think I want somebody banging a, you know, drum in my ear. I love it. The public was being conditioned. There are other quotes that I've used in other works by Aldous Huxley about music and strobe lights. He didn't call them sort of bright lights, you know, pulsing and so on. How they would use these things to control people, especially the young. And then you have quotes, literal quotes by The Who, The Jefferson Airplane, Mother's Invention, groups like that in the 60s saying, yes, we're creating a generation gap. We're separating the old folks from these new values that we want. It's a great tool for revolution, they said. They would use those words. And so this sort of stuff was not by accident. And toward the end of the 60s, this James Coonan had a book called The Strawberry Statement, where he was describing, you know, how this worked. And he said there was this meeting of the SDS, very radical student group, and he was had some notes from the meeting, and so he was testifying before Congress, and he said, look, we were offered some ESSO, that's Rockefeller, it's now called Exxon, ESSO at the time, Rockefeller money to make a lot of radical commotion. He was talking about Chicago and the student demonstrations, so that they, the left wing of the ruling class, he's talking about the Rockefellers, these types, can look more to the center as they move more to the left. In other words, if you portray somebody as really far out leftist, then as you move somewhat to the left, more liberal, you don't appear as extreme as you would have. And so that's what this stuff was all about in the 60s, this student movement. It wasn't just spontaneous. It was, you know, well-planned, well-developed. And so the next year, after 68, Kunin's book, you had a couple of things in quick succession, which are very interesting. On March 11th of 69, the vice president of Planned Parenthood World Population, now remember, they're supported, funded by Rockefeller, among others, Rockefeller Foundation. His name was Frederick Jaffe, and he had this study. It was a study about population policy for the U.S., and it was printed containing a memo, included a memo to Population Council. Now remember, that was set up by the Rockefellers, Rockefeller and Dulles, to Population Council President Bernard Berelson. And it gives lots of examples, but I'll include just five examples of proposed measures to reduce fertility. This is from this memo. One, encourage increased homosexuality. Have we had that? Number two, fertility control agents in the water supply. There's some interest in that. Three, encourage women to work. At this time, you saw greater and greater numbers of women leaving the home after work. Four, abortion and sterilization on demand. Now, remember, this is before Roe versus Wade. This is in 69. And five, make contraception truly available and accessible to all meaning teenagers. And what have we got today? Exactly that. Now, just 9 days later, March 20th, there's this meeting of pediatric physicians in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And the Pittsburgh pediatric physician, Lawrence Dunnigan, is going there. He's in attendance, you know, with all the rest. And he sits down, and here comes this fellow out to speak called Dr. Richard Day. Now, Day has just been, for the previous 4 years, National Medical Director of Planned Parenthood. Remember, funded by Rockefeller. That's from 65 to 68. And so he's sitting there, and all of a sudden he starts hearing stuff. And he looks around, and all these physicians are just sitting there, you know, not reacting to this. But Dr. Day says a whole lot of things about there'll be terrorist attacks in the future and so forth. But a couple of things are of particular interest. Day says in the future there will be hard-to-cure diseases created, and that cures for nearly all cancers had already been developed but were being hidden at the Rockefeller Institute so that populations would not increase. Now, remember those 2 points, because now we move to the next year, a year later, July 1, 1970. We're in the Senate. There's Senate appropriations hearings for the Department of Defense. And they have a number of these eminent scientists, biologists there. And they're talking about how within 5 to 10 years, it would be possible to produce a synthetic biological agent that's an infective microorganism, an agent that does not naturally exist and for which no natural immunity could have been acquired. Now remember that. No natural immunity, infective microorganism. Tentative plans to initiate a program to develop such an agent were discussed by the National Research Council. Now remember, it's that National Research Council that the Rockefellers used to funnel their money to Alfred Kinsey's research. All right, now speed up 17 years later. What's happened between 70 and 87? AIDS, right? AIDS has come out. Then they hold hearings in the British House of Commons from April 8th to May 13th of 87 regarding AIDS, and includes the following statement, quote, this is 17 years later after these hearings of Department of Defense. 17 years later, hearings in the British House of Commons regarding AIDS will include the following, quote, every biological scientist who has dispassionately studied the virus and the epidemic knows that the origins of the virus could lie in the developments of modern biology. Some who know perfectly well what has happened are deliberately fudging scientific data to keep the heat off them and fellow members of their molecular biological club, end quote. So, you know, just think about that. What they said in 70 they were planning to do, 17 years later, what this these hearings say in the British House of Commons.
And Fred, one of the things that the fellow from the military said, he said, you know, some people think we shouldn't develop this new disease because it would be a new form of mass killing. But we want to do it anyway. That was Dr. David MacArthur, worked for the military and testifying before the House Appropriations Committee for Military Affairs. So, you know, this was all planned long, long ago. We'll be right back in just a moment with Dr. Cuddy.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Good morning, honey. Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system. I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water, so I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin. And wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a travel Berkey today for only $209 or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
Ted Anderson from Midas. It's December 6, 2006. Gold's at $632.80, and 1 ounce gold coins can be purchased for $653.62, $329.36 for half, and $159.58 for quarter ounce coins. That's $653.62, $329.36, and $159.58. On June 4th, 1963, an unknown presidential decree, Executive Order 11,110, was signed with the authority to strip the Federal Reserve Bank of its power to lend money to the United States government and interest. With the stroke of a pen, Kennedy would have put the Fed out of business. The November assassination quieted the production of the new currency. However, the executive order still stands unrepealed. Midas has the Kennedy versus Fed document. Call 800-686-2237. Unlike your liberty, the paper is free. Call 800-686-2237. If you're interested in breaking the bondage of taxation and debt, call 800-686-2237.
We understand that decisions related to health can be overwhelming. That is why at ResearchedHerbs.com we take pride in offering you herbs whose safety and effectiveness have been proven time and time again. For example, did you know that Live 52, the top-selling natural herbal supplement for liver diseases since 1930, is backed by over 300 research studies and clinical trials and prescribed by more than 200,000 health professionals worldwide? In fact, the effectiveness of all the herbs featured on ResearchedHerbs.com, including those for cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis, cirrhosis, and hepatitis, among others, is extremely well documented. Our website, ResearchedHerbs.com, was created to empower you with the information and answers you need to make the right health decisions. Researched and proven herbs at great prices. Visit us online at ResearchedHerbs.com or call 1-800-845-3841 for more information. That's 1-800-845-3841.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who, of course, is certainly one of our favorite guests, and you'll find his articles at newsreviews.com. That's www.newsreviews.com. He's talking about his most recent article, Part 2 of Population Control. So go right ahead, Dennis.
Sure. And remember, this is a... These aren't isolated quotes of isolated years. There's a progression to this thing. We just finished with the 1970, the Senate hearings with Department of Defense, and how they were planning to create this infective microorganism that doesn't naturally occur, no natural immunity. And remember, that's right after, the very year after, Dr. Dunnigan. Here's Dr. Day say that in the future there would be hard to cure diseases created. Remember that. So this is a progression. These things are sort of have this flow to them over the years. And so in that same year, 1970, that's when David Rockefeller becomes chairman of the CFR. And he's for 15 years. He's chairman until 85. And it's during that time a number of interesting articles appear. For example, The Hard Road to World Order in their journal Foreign Affairs in 1974 by Richard Gardner. And he is saying that, quote, an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. So this is an example of how there's this gradual process. In other words, even though they might like to say, well, you know, national sovereignty is gone, they recognize that if they propose something like that immediately or all at once, the public would react. So notice that it's an erosion, piece by piece, maybe a UN action, you know, and have some American soldiers have to serve under the UN, you know, things like that. So there's a gradual erosion. And a couple of years later, in 72, there's something called the Rockefeller Commission on Population. It was, you know, proposed and by Richard Nixon, and he's very much supportive of this stuff, the so-called conservative Nixon. And they issue a report advocating literally population control. And in this case, they're not just talking about the third world. They state that further growth of the American population could cause economic problems, and that, and this is a rather revealing quote, they say that, in quote, in any case, no generation needs to know the ultimate goal or the final means, only the direction to which they will be found, end quote. Now think about that. What they're saying, in other words, is we're going to control you, we're just not going to tell you how. There's this ultimate goal, and it says no generation, which means it's long term, you know, not just a generation, no generation, this generation, the next generation, whatever. And you don't need to know the ultimate goal. You know, they're not going to reveal what they're really up to, or the final means for controlling you or eliminating you or whatever. Only the direction to which they will be found. In other words, you know, there's lots of people, let's have less people, but then the fine points of this control will be kept from the public. And so they're in effect, this quote acknowledges that. They're just admitting it flat out. Now, the next year, in 73, is when David Rockefeller publishes his article in the New York Times in August of 73. And now remember, in 73, everybody and their grandmother knows that Chairman Mao in China is a brutal dictator, and millions of people have been, you know, wiped out, slaughtered through their farm relocation systems and so on. But in this article, Rockefeller goes on and on praising, quote, the social experiment in China under Chairman Mao's leadership, end quote. And he says things like, no matter what the cost, or despite the cost, you know, this really is a successful sort of thing. Again, it's that sort of elitist attitude that, you know, these little peasants down there really don't matter. And, you know, if Chairman Mao had to get rid of some of them, well, that's the way it is. And now in that same year, he's a busy boy, David Rockefeller. He's beginning the Trilateral Commission. And in there, once again, they're very bold, very blatant. They say, quote, population planning should be an integral part of social and economic development, end quote. Same year again, George H.W. Bush is one of the players in this act, and he praises the Population Crisis Committee for having played a major role in assisting government policymakers and mobilizing U.S. response to world population challenge. See, they use word euphemisms like challenge. Well, the PCC, that Population Crisis Committee, was founded by a General William Draper, who had been vice chairman of, yes, you guessed it, Planned Parenthood. And that outfit, again, largely funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. In the same year, building on the events of the 60s and the hippie free love movement and so on, there's a book published. Now, these guys don't write many books themselves, but here they are. John D. III is writing a book called The Second American Revolution. Now, you'd think this would be about business, but it's really not, and we'll pick up after the break.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And just remember, 1973 was the year that we banned DDT. It cost about 100 million lives throughout the world the last 33 years. And now they found out it just isn't quite so bad.
Copies of the preceding broadcast are available at GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
For years, you've been hearing about Herbal Healer Academy and how it's remained the leader in effective, alternative, and natural medicine and education. But how can they continue to hold that title for years on end? The answer is high quality and huge selection. Just visit herbalhealer.com and shop online or request a free catalog. You're bound to find the alternative you're looking for. Did you know that Herbal Healer carries the latest, safest, and effective weight loss products? You can also count on Herbal Healer for the largest selection of safe and natural supplements just for children. And don't forget your pets. Herbal Healer even has natural mineral supplements for all your animals, including horses, cows, and birds. Take a peek at their online calendar, and you're sure to find everything you need and maybe something you didn't realize you needed. Visit HerbalHealer.com and don't forget to sign up for the free Herbal Healer newsletter. HerbalHealer.com, working with the power of nature.
Now you can bring Berkey purification power anywhere with the Sport Berkey filtration bottle. Ideal for sporting games, camping or boating, or Sport Berkey is small enough to store in your glove box, so it's ideal backup for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, floods, or earthquakes. It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles, the Sport Berkey's patented filter formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon 222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $70 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Order your Berkey Sport today. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Hey, Emily. Wow, you look great.
I feel great. I've been using MetaCleanse Colon Cleanse.
Really? What is it? How does it work?
Well, MetaCleanse is a natural fiber therapy with ground flaxseed, psyllium, and bentonite clay that eliminates toxins from the body. MetaCleanse is easy to use without being intrusive. You take 2 tablespoons of MetaCleanse powder, mix with water or juice, drink, and it does all the work for you.
That's it? Well, it sounds so easy and convenient.
It is easy. Plus, the FDA says flaxseed works to prevent cancer and helps with menopause, weight loss, irritable bowel syndrome, and constipation.
It helps with all of those ailments? That's amazing.
And the bentonite clay in MetaCleanse eliminates viruses and pesticides in the intestinal tract.
Wow. Where can I buy MetaCleanse?
A 1-month supply is available online at MetaCleanse.com. That's MetaCleanse.com. For only $26.90, MetaCleanse is shipped directly to you. Or call 1-800-317-9547. That's 800-317-9547.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And before I go on, of course, Dennis Cuddy is a frequent guest here on Radio Liberty. You can read his articles at newsreviews.com. You just go to that website and you go from the left side and you scroll down. You'll see his name there. Click that in. You'll find he puts up almost one article a week. I suggest you pull them down and put them in a binder and read them over and over again, because there's a tremendous amount of wisdom there. We carry Dr. Cuddy's books. We have it right now. His book, Road to Socialism. We have his book, Cover Up. And I think we still have a few copies of one of his, or two of his other books. So we certainly carry his Chronology for Education for the New World Order. And if you'd like to get any of these, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But we're trying to get his book, The Secret Records Revealed, back in print. It's been out of print for some time, and they're asking a ridiculous price for it up on the Internet. It's an important book. We need to get it back in print. And so we're offering a pre-publication offer. If you want to get a case of his books, they're $149.95. And if you get them now, they're less than a third of what they would be, you know, after they're actually printed. So if you'd be interested in helping Dr. Cuddy and helping me get this back in print, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 1-800-544-8927 and order a case of your books. We won't bill you until we have all the pledges in and we're ready to go. So give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Order a case of Dr. Cuddy's book, Secret Records Reveal, updated with an index. Great book. Dr. Cuddy, why don't you go right ahead?
Sure. And picking up on what you just said about the ridiculous price on the Internet, I've looked at some of those prices for that, and the globalists are like four or five or six times what the price was. So, I mean, if somebody were to order a case of that book from you at a third of the retail, they could probably turn around. I mean, they can do what they want to with them, read them, give them to friends or whatever, but I would imagine they could even turn around and sell them for a profit themselves, given the high price that is going for those books now on the Internet, and this one would be the updated version with an index, so it would be even more desirable. I mean, if those books on the Internet are calling in $50-$60, surely people would be willing to pay a significant amount over the retail to get an updated version with an index. So it could actually wind up, if somebody orders a case of the books from you, being a money-making thing for them, for themselves. Now, picking up where I left off, in 1973, John D. Rockefeller III is a very busy person. You know, they're world travelers and meetings all the time. So these fellows rarely actually write books, but he's written one here. It's called The Second American Revolution. That's an interesting term, The Second American Revolution. So there's been this revolution. Remember what I said about James Koonin's book, The Strawberry Statement, about SO money to create a commotion, a revolution, so that they, the elite, the left wing of the elite class, could move to the left. Well, you would think a book by Rockefeller would be about something like banking. You know, they're identified with Chase Manhattan Bank and Chase National Bank and so on. And you would think if they were writing anything, being conservative banker types, they would be shocked and dismayed at all of these hippies and things going on in the 60s. But no. In this book that he takes time to write, and out of his busy schedule, he actually applauds sexual liberation and what he calls the, quote, humanistic revolution. He loves that, humanistic revolution. At the same time, he disparages old-fashioned nationalism. In other words, American nationalism. If you're a strong patriotic type of, believer in the U.S. national government and so forth, though, he doesn't like this. This is very much a put-down that he gives to nationalism. And so he takes time to write this, and the very next year, in 74, another Rockefeller, CFR chairman David Rockefeller, and others, encouraged somebody named David R. Young to form early in 85, the next year he'll form it, something called Oxford Analytica. Now, you probably never heard of this. You probably never heard of this guy. You probably never heard of Oxford Analytica. But if you go to their website, you can find out some rather interesting things. The guy began his journey years before, working for Rockefeller, getting to know, you know, Henry Kissinger personally and so on. And so why am I spending time on this? Well, David Rockefeller encouraged this guy to form this group. What is it? What you'll find, and you may have never heard of this, been around a long time, it's the first private sector, overt, global intelligence network. Think about that. Among its clients, people who come to it for information, are the UN, NATO, World Bank, Chase Manhattan Bank, Bechtel, oil companies like Chevron Texaco, Shell Oil, IBM, and so on, many others. On its international advisory board is inevitably, there will be everywhere, a Rhodes Scholar. In this case, it's former U.S. Senator Bill Bradley, as well as James O'Toole, who's the Mortimer J. Adler Senior Fellow at the Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies. And interestingly for today, among its members will be Rick Warren. You may have heard of him in the news recently. He's a megachurch pastor, author of The Purpose-Driven Life, who also, Rick Warren, is a member of the CFR. Now think about that. What's this pastor doing as a member of the CFR, and what is this this pastor doing making a big deal when he's being criticized by Joe Farah of WorldNet Daily of saying, I'm a member of the CFR and Oxford Analytica. I mean, he goes out of his way to mention that. So if you think about it, this thing has a real purpose, to borrow a term from Rick Warren. Now, that same year of 74, toward the end of the year, John D. Rockefeller III, busy boy, he's over in Romania, in Bucharest. He gets around. Well, he's over there talking to a population group, and he declares that, quote, this is Rockefeller, population planning must be a fundamental and integral part of any modern development program, recognized as such by national leadership and supported fully. Okay, now remember that. Because that same year, at the end of the year, December, about the same time, you have National Security Council Memorandum 200, NSSM 200, and it has a long title, Implications of Worldwide Population Growth for U.S. Security and Interest Overseas. It's confidential, you know, classified. It's proposed by Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. Remember, he was with the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, and a buddy of this David Young, who actually Kissinger invited Young to come and work for him, which he did at the White House that I just mentioned. And it's proposed by Kissinger and approved by National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft. You'll recall remembering him from George Bush's White House and so on. Now, this document says, quote, if future numbers are to be kept within reasonable bounds, it is urgent that measures to reduce fertility, remember that, reduce, not just, you know, stabilize, reduce fertility be started and made effective in the 1970s and 1980s. Now, think about that. Reduce fertility. They're not just talking about, you know, let's have a contraceptive. They're reducing fertility itself. It goes on. Financial assistance will be given to other countries considering such factors as population growth. Food and agricultural assistance is vital for any population-sensitive development strategy. There's that word, development again. Remember what Rockefeller said at Bucharest, any modern development program. The quote goes on, allocation of scarce resources should take account of what steps the country is taking to control in population control. In other words, you're not going to get it. You need food? Tough if you're not taking population control measures. And the quote continues, there is an alternative view that mandatory programs may be needed. In other words, they're entertaining the possibility this may not be voluntary at all. You may be forced to do this. Now, the next year, in 75, the president of the Rockefeller Foundation at this time is John Knowles, and they issue, you know, an annual report at the end. And he says, quote, the web of interdependence is tightening. We are one world, and there will be one future, for better or worse, for us all. Central to a new ethic of making less more is controlled economic growth, which conserves scarce resources, provides equitable distribution of income and wealth. It is also necessary to control fertility rates at the replacement level and to achieve zero population growth as rapidly as possible. Zero growth. Then, 2 years later, November of 77, the Soviet, it's a periodical called New Times, it reports that David Rockefeller just sent a message to the Kremlin leaders, all right, to the Soviet leaders, and he says, quote, my congratulations on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of the October Revolution, end quote. Now remember, just like the communist Chinese, 60 years has gone by. Everybody knows what Stalin and Lenin did. They know about those five-year plans that's wiped out millions and millions of people, but here he is congratulating these the Soviet communists on the 60 years of their October revolution. And so what we have here is we're up through 77. Just a few years later, you're starting to see the results. Remember that National Security Council memorandum, how food would be used and so forth. Well, there's a Catholic archbishop over in Ghana. Now remember, this is Ghana. It's an archbishop named Peter Proku Dari of Ghana. And he's giving this interview in December of that year, in 1980. And he reveals that, quote, the World Bank denied loans to Ghana until my country agreed to institute a nationwide contraceptive and family planning policy. There was also pressure, he says, to legalize abortion, although the church, his Catholic Church, and the people have so far been able to prevent this. For how long? I don't know. He goes on to say,
The World Bank's attitude shows a total disregard for the beliefs of the people of the Third World. End quote. Now, some years later, you have a person also from Ghana named Kofi Annan. And what does he do after he's been placed in this high-level position as Secretary General of the UN? He's received the blessing of these powerful people. What does he do when 700,000 or so Rwandans are being slaughtered? Nothing. Nothing. A Canadian general who was in charge of UN troops at the time was totally frustrated, not allowed by Kofi Annan to do anything about this. Literally, later on, this Canadian general almost, you know, lost his mind. You could find him wandering around up in Canada, sleeping on a park bench, having nightmares about the whole thing. But Kofi Annan from Ghana didn't do anything to prevent it. That's in 1980. Further into the 80s, what you have back in this country, now remember, all of these have to be put together. You know, there's a foreign policy element, there's a population control element, there's a manipulation element, there's, you know, development programs, but they don't leave any stone unturned. So in the mid-80s, in 1985, when I was, I had just come to the Department of Education during the Reagan years in 82. And so I was there, and one day somebody sends me this memo. And it's dated April 19th, 1985, by a Jim Grob. And I'm looking at it. It's on Seattle Public School Stationery. Public School, Seattle. And it says, Jim Grob of the Rockefeller Project writes this memo, and it cautions that, quote, the term global education is an extreme political hot potato at this time, with right-wing Christian groups opposing its use. And he goes on and says, instead of using the term global education, this guy Grob, the Rockefeller Project, says district personnel should note that a, quote, temporarily safe term is multicultural international curriculum development, end quote. Now notice a couple of things here. They're promoting global education. The Christians are catching on to them and opposing its use. They say a temporarily safe term. In other words, they're going to change. They're going to do the same thing, but they're going to change the term until the Christians catch on again. That's why it says temporarily safe. He said, let's change the name of this to call it multicultural international curriculum development. You know, give it a big, nice sounding name, and so maybe the public will be fooled for a while, and so we can go about our globalizing of education, because they want to create this global mentality in the schools. So no aspect is left unturned. Whether it's fertility rates, whether it's hard to cure diseases, whether it's education, whether it's development programs, whether it's changing the spiritual, economic, political, and social, as that 1959 document said, whether it's a change in music, a change in attitude, a change in everything. As Rockefeller John D. III said, the second American Revolution is what they were bringing about. And if you look back over these years, you can see this pattern unfolding. You'll actually see things, maybe some of you, or if you're old enough, remember a movie called Failsafe. Now, this was back in the 60s, around 64. If you check that out at a Blockbuster or whatever, it's an interesting movie in the sense of what it foretells. Oftentimes these people, Rockefellers, whoever, will foretell stuff, like they'll broadcast what we're going to do. And so if you look at that, there's, I believe, Walter Matthau is an interesting professor. And he's looking at the possibility of a nuclear confrontation. And he's going back and forth with this general who's having nightmares. And basically, to make a long story short, the movie is really a discussion about what should be done when. And Matthau is saying, well, we ought to have a preemptive strike against our enemies. And the general is saying, but, you know, that'll be murder. And Matthau says, but once you've identified that these are your enemies, it's better them first than us. And he says, Matthau says, I learned that from the Nazis. You know, he's a survivor of that period of World War II. And the general looks at him and says, well, you know, I think maybe you've learned your lesson too well from the Nazis. And it's an interesting interplay forecasting the attitude that they're trying to develop of preemptive military strikes. At the time, they're all aghast at it. But more recently, look at what happened in Iraq, and the public is willing to accept it. It's that sort of slow conditioning process that Tavistock, remember when I started this program, I mentioned Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. One of their senior researchers was a Fred Emery, and he's developed this theory called Theory of Social Turbulence, which said that the people will go into psychological retreat if you throw these crises at them. And they also use this sort of slow conditioning process. And that's why in previous programs I've mentioned how prior to 9/11, the public was not willing to give up its freedoms, you know, First Amendment rights, and so on and so on. But then you have this crisis, this shock of 9/11, and immediately, I mean, not two or three days later, immediately the Washington Post and ABC come out with a poll saying two-thirds of the public would now be willing to give up some of their freedoms in order to have peace and safety. Next thing you know, they ask another question, very simply, and it says, what do you think of torture? And the American public says the same thing. Two-thirds said, yeah, we'll approve it. Lo and behold, Abu Ghraib appears shortly thereafter.
Hey, we're out of time. Our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we'll look forward to having you back again real soon, Dennis. But I hope our listeners will go to newswithviews.com and read that great article. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you know where the 78 potentially active volcanoes in the U.S. are located? And do you know the locations of the top 300 prime terrorist targets? You can find these answers and more in the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA. With the more than 50 interactive parameters, you can pinpoint natural and man-made disaster areas, brewing environmental catastrophes, the safest cities, the best places for solar and wind energy, and much, much more. Complete with 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 to order on the web or at BerkeyWater.com.
It's a fact. You can legally eliminate credit card debt, which has been fraudulently created by the banks. Since its creation in 1913, the Federal Reserve has not been held responsible for its own debt. So why should you, the hardworking American, be harassed for yours? There's a double standard when it comes to being responsible for debt, and unlike the Federal Reserve, the people of this country can't print more money when needed. Day of Jubilee has created a successful program designed for people that want to stop harassing calls and threatening letters from bill collectors. This is not a debt consolidation company. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their credit card debt. Instead of living each day in fear, it's time to turn your life around. Call Day of Jubilee, open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time at 920-293-8024. That's 920-293-8024 and ask for Robert. Don't wait any longer to get your life back in order.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and If you'd like to help us and join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to order a pre-publication case of Dr. Cuddy's books for $149.95, then you can do whatever you want to with them. Why, this is the time to do it, because once they're published, you won't be able to get them at this price. So give us a call. We won't bill you until we're ready to start printing. Dr. Cuddy was talking about remarks by Dr. Richard Day, head of the Planned Parenthood, and he was medical director of Planned Parenthood, and a talk he gave back in 1969. We have interviews with Dr. Donahue, who attended that meeting. There's a four-tape set called The New Order of the Barbarians, and you'll find out everything going on, whether it's the fact that our automotive industry would be effectively destroyed, the fact that we'd be playing our athletes millions of dollars, the fact they'd be creating new diseases or concealing the treatments for cancer. All this was covered back in 1969. This is a four-tape set. You can actually get the transcript with this if you want that. It's additional. But that's The New Order of the Barbarians, an excellent four-tape set with a transcript if you want to get it. And then if you want to know the origin of the AIDS virus, the book written by Dr. Garth Nicholson, one of the country's leading scientists, Project Daylily. It's an unforgettable book. Reads like Tom Clancy. But, of course, this book is true, even though it's written as a faction, we could call it. And then, of course, we carry the book of the emerging viruses, goes into the background of the creation of the AIDS virus, how it was created. And then, of course, we have my talk on planned population reduction. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they really do intend to kill off a large part of the world's population. All you need to do is read what they're talking about, and of course that a lot of that will come about when World War III comes to America. Certainly, you need to think very seriously about getting the material we have in water fluoridation. And you have to understand that AIDS targets blacks primarily, and water fluoridation targets blacks primarily, because if you have fluoridated water, the incidence of the level of blood in the of lead in the blood goes up six times in blacks. It only doubles in whites, but it goes up six times in blacks. It makes them become violent and lowers their intelligence, gets them into a situation of rage. That's what lead does to the brain, and we're poisoning the blacks in America with water fluoridation. They know what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. The scientific studies are there. In fact, that's covered in Dr. Blaylock's talk, Nutrition and Behavior. But you're never going to hear this elsewhere. And the AIDS virus is specifically designed to attack blacks much more than whites, which is why the majority of new AIDS cases in the United States are in blacks. And ladies and gentlemen, I believe every individual is a unique person created in the image and likeness of God. And if you're not concerned about what happens to the blacks, why, you're not really entitled to be free, and you'll certainly lose your freedom. If good people and the moral people of this country won't stand up now, when will they stand up? And if they don't stand up, who's going to save this country? Who's going to stop the carnage, the genocide that's taking place throughout the world today? We've lost almost 100 million people because of the ban on DDT, and now they've suddenly decided it maybe isn't such a bad idea after all. You really need to get our population control special, and actually our population control special includes four tape sets on population control, genocide, Tuskegee, and why do we still have cancer. But if you have any of those, why, you can substitute things like we have the National Security Study Memorandum 200 you can get in place of a four tape set, or the complete text of Dr. MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee, and actually it was in 1969. We have all of this material. You need to get it. You need to help us get the truth out. You can ask for a free copy of my Population Control Agenda monograph. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be right back.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps, as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for flexible source of...
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. The views of our guests, and of course our guest this afternoon is Dr. David Kennedy. And we've had Dr. Kennedy on recently talking about the dangers of water fluoridation and really how it impacts on fertility and the mind and the endocrine system and the bones and really almost every organ system in the body. And they know that. They're systematically poisoning and destroying the minds of our youth. And we actually carry his video, Let the Truth Be Told. That's the Let the Truth Be Told is the story of water fluoridation. Excellent. But today we're going to be talking about another DVD Dr. Kennedy's put out. We call it The Smoking Tooth. The Smoking Tooth, because you'll actually see, using a mercury screen, really what happens when you have a tooth in your mouth that has a mercury filling in it, and you can actually see the vaporization of the mercury constantly venting into your system and chronically poisoning you, and the incidence of Alzheimer's disease is rising to an explosive level. And one of my good friends, a doctor who practiced medicine with me, much younger than I am, now is incapacitated by Alzheimer's disease, and so many people are getting Alzheimer's disease. And the government doesn't know why it's happening, but they're sure it has nothing to do with your mercury fillings. They can assure you of that, but just trust them. And I would suggest we don't trust them. And I'm going to let Dr. Kennedy tell you why you shouldn't trust them. Dr. Kennedy's a dentist. He's retired now and spending full time, like Paul Revere, trying to get people to understand that they're poisoning us and they're poisoning our children. Dr. Kennedy, thanks so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on your program again.
Well, why don't you explain to our listener what the smoking tooth is and why that's so important?
Well, you know, it's proof positive, beyond a shadow of a doubt. There's no question that mercury vapor is coming off your fillings, and that the video is just a little demonstration. We've measured it by autopsies. We've measured it with mercury sniffers. We've measured it in 20 different fashions, but you measure your saliva, your urine, your blood. There's no tissue in the human body that we can't measure and find mercury coming out of your fillings. We've even done animal studies. Poor little monkeys, you know, they had mercury coming out their rear end and in their jawbone, in their brains, and their kidneys. And the poor little sheep, they said it's really bad for them. But, you know, there is no question. But, you know, the only thing we have now is we got the people from the Food and Drug Administration that are still in denial, saying, oh, really, there's no problem. And the people that manufacture this stuff saying, we're not aware of any evidence proving that caused this. And then there's all the other scientific evidence, all the scientists around the world. I think 9 countries now have prohibited its use in vulnerable subsets. The manufacturers themselves, when you get a package of the stuff and you open it up and look inside, it says, it has a big skull and crossbones. And it says there was a dentist that was severely poisoned, and he was sued the manufacturer, said, you never told me that. And they said, no, it says right on the package you're buying poison. So, you know, and the court said they could not imagine what else the manufacturers could have told the poor dentist that would have better informed him of the fact that he could become poisoned by using dental amalgam. So, but for your listeners, tell them not to run out and have the same idiots that put the stuff in take it out, because you can get really a big blast of mercury doing that.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. David Kennedy talking about mercury fillings, talking about mercury toxicity. It's prevalent in our society, and so many, of course, are pregnant women. They not only have mercury fillings, of course, vented, and that mercury goes into the mind of their brain of their developing child, but now they're giving them a mercury shot, an influenza shot loaded with mercury during the first trimester to do maximum damage to the child. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you through the hills, from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battles for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests and the views of our listeners. And, well, today our guest is Dr. David Kennedy. And Dr. Kennedy is going to be talking about the danger of mercury amalgams, of course, the exposure to mercury that your children are getting through their influenza shots. And you know, the difficulty is that there's many people who've studied the relationship between dental fillings and Alzheimer's disease feel there's a causal relationship here with those people who are unable to excrete mercury. And certainly some people can handle mercury all right, and some people can't handle it at all. And today, one in every 166 children is autistic. 30 years ago, it was one in every 10,000 children. Today, one in every six children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality, from autism to Asperger's disease to attention deficit disorder to attention hyperactivity disorder to learning disabilities. And the government says, well, we have no idea why this is happening, but it has nothing to do with the mercury in the vaccines, has nothing to do with the mercury in the fillings. You can trust us, because who would want to hurt children? Yet these are the same people who are encouraging abortion. Of course they want to hurt children. They just don't want you to know about it. Well, Dr. Kennedy, would you mind briefly describing the smoking tooth that they will see when they get your video entitled The Smoking Tooth?
Yes, exactly, and that they can even watch an excerpt from it on the internet. But basically, at a meeting in Oxford, England, in National Academy of Oral Medicine Toxicology, one of our members, Roger Eichmann, who is a minor, and that one of the things that minors do is they use an ultraviolet light that is created that actually shows only mercury vapor. And some people don't understand it's the principle of atomic absorption. But that you can put anything else in front of that light and it will not show up. But mercury vapor is what shows up. And so he takes this light and turns it on, and he holds a tooth that, you know, has been warmed up to his hand.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, I was asking Dr. Kennedy to explain this picture that they opened the video with, the smoking tooth. It goes into the background of the dangers of mercury dental fillings. And of course, basically, of course, you have the mercury in your mouth and in the fillings. But when you chew, why, it increases the amount of vapor. If you warm the area, in other words, if you take a cup of hot coffee or swallow of hot coffee or anything else that's hot, why, it tends to cause that filling to vent mercury. And it does that sometimes for literally as long as you have it in your mouth. It's constantly venting mercury. They call them silver fillings. They're not silver fillings. The predominant thing of them is mercury, and there is no thing as toxic as mercury. Look it up on the internet. It's one of the most toxic substances we know, so why are we putting it in dental fillings when other countries throughout the world have literally outlawed them? Sweden, you know, prohibits the dentists, or will not pay for any dentist putting in mercury fillings, but they'll pay them to take them out. Why? Because they know it's toxic. And in Sweden, they want to protect their people. So, David, would you mind explaining to our listeners what they'll actually see with this picture of the smoking tooth?
And you're right that the mercury, the higher the temperature, the more it comes off. But he just puts it at 98.6 degrees, the same temperature as your tongue. So, you know, where does it say, you know, don't put your tongue on these things? You know, and the thing starts smoking. And that, you know, you can, then he dips it in a little water that's 110 degrees. You know, the Starbucks, they try to get up to 140 degrees. So every 10 degrees increase in temperature, it doubles the amount of mercury coming off the filling. So at 110 degrees, this thing looks like he's holding a big old stogie cigar coming there. You know, and it's just really smoking away. So what happens is mercury vapor is one of the most toxic forms of mercury. You know, you hear about all this stuff about fish and you shouldn't eat fish because of the mercury in it. Well, there's a form of mercury that's more toxic than fish, not if you eat it, but if you inhale it. And that's because mercury vapor gets in your bloodstream, and it takes about the time for the blood to go around the body about 3 times before the body can put a charge on it. Uncharged molecules go right into the brain, and that's the problem, is that when that mercury gets in the brain, getting it back out is nearly impossible. And that right in there lies the rub. And that if you've got mercury in your brain and you can't get it out, if you're one of the genetically predisposed people who can't get mercury out of the brains, then, you know, that's like a 22 caliber bullet from the mafia just banging around inside your brain forever. It just keeps destroying more and more. The cell dies, the mercury's released, it goes over and destroys some more cells. And that is the basis of Alzheimer's disease. It's not one exposure or two exposures. It's exactly like cigarettes. A little bit every day, for day after day, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, and pretty soon you don't have enough brain cells left to remember what your children look like. It's a horrible, devastating, mind-destroying disease. 1 out of 10 seniors will suffer from it. We lost our President Reagan. And that, what's the problem? If you grind these people up and look at them, they've got 4 times more mercury in their brain than somebody that does not have Alzheimer's disease. Does that prove causation? No, but you'd sure be looking for a smoking gun, wouldn't you? And that when you start looking at the number of teeth in people, you find the amount of mercury in their brain is proportional to the number of teeth with mercury fillings. And so, you know, put the dots together for them. You know, show them you got mercury in your teeth, you got mercury in your brain. You got mercury in your brain. If you don't have the ability to get it back out, and some people do, you know, obviously, my dad, he was a dentist. Still is. He's retired, but he's only 94 years old, and he's sharp as a tack. Mercury doesn't bother Kennedys. Well, fine. But it does bother Reagan, so don't be putting that in everybody's mouth unless you know how they handle mercury. And that's the problem, is that we have a substantial subset of the population that simply cannot handle exposure to mercury. And that we've identified 2 different genotypes. One is an APOE gene, and the other is a porphyrin gene. And so how can you say that this product is safe for all mankind? As a matter of fact, there was an FDA panel that just met to review this, and they voted 13-7 saying, no, it's not logical or even reasonable to conclude that exposure to this mercury is not a problem.
But I'm sure that nothing will come out of it, because there are people in our government who want to continue poisoning our people. I mean, these are not stupid people at all. They just have a different worldview. And they really feel there are too many people in the world, and they're really unconcerned about all the harm that they're really doing. And of course, the thing is that the most average dentist has no idea what we're talking about, because he's programmed in dental school. He's programmed by the journals he reads. He's programmed by the meetings he attends. And it's the whole idea is, well, it's they think that we don't know what we're doing. They're terrible people. They hate dentists. No, we don't hate dentists. We want you to get the information. We want you to inform your dentist. The studies are there on mercury. The studies are there. The scientific studies are there on fluoride. It is the fact that your dentist has never heard the information any more than your doctor has. That's why we need to educate people in the listening audience so they can get to the dentist. Would you agree with that, Dr. Kennedy, who is himself a dentist?
You know, the dental schools are in the grip of a trade association called the American Dollar Association, ADA.
And that's actually the American Dental Association.
Oh, yeah, ADA. I forgot what that D stood for. I thought it was their grade in school. Anyway, the ADA accredits dental schools, and that they tell the dental schools what they should teach the students, and that they also tell the state boards what they need to test the students over, and they also tell the national exam that the students take what the questions are. So here we have an organization that is not a government agency. It's a private entity. It's basically a trade association that represents the interests of the manufacturers, and this is their own words, and the dentists.
And, of course, the manufacturers, don't they have some sort of a relationship to the people who manufacture the amalgam, the mercury amalgam that they're poisoning the people with?
You mean there might be a conflict of interest, like they have the patent on the product for many years? Yes, that's exactly correct, Sam, that they had the patent. And they make money because they have their seal of approval on the package. And that they say the seal of approval carries no duty of care. In other words, you can buy it with the seal of approval or you can buy it without, but they make money off the seal of approval, and that's the deal.
Is that seal right close to the skull and crossbones they have on it?
I think they put it on the other side of the package.
Okay.
So they don't want to be too close to the skull head. So anyway, you know, these people who are making money hand over fist from advertising, from seal of approval, from the conventions, they rent booths to huge companies and corporations that sell this stuff, and they claim that they owe no duty of care to the public because they're not a government agency, but they regulate dentistry. And so your dentist, and I know, I'm a dentist, I used to think mercury fillings were safe, so did my dad, that we're not bad people, we just didn't know. And that's the tragedy, is that a lot of good people are sucked in by a bad organization, in my opinion, and that what they do is that they destroy the health of the American people. And that is where the real rub lies, and people need to speak up about this, because it won't go away because you and I say this. It'll only go away because people stand up and fight for their right for safe dentistry, safe water, and quality health care.
And, of course, David, how many countries now do they really more or less ban mercury fillings in?
Well, ban is a tough word, because Sweden still allows some mercury fillings to be used in mentally deranged children. So, you know, that if you're a complete loony person and you can't sit still, some dentist might come in and grind on your tooth for 60 seconds and stuff something in it. Other than that, in some exceptional circumstances, they don't use any in Sweden. Germany has limited to, like my old dentist friend from Germany, he said, just us old guys can have them now. And so no women and no children, and et cetera. The old guys, of course, can have them. But, you know, who cares if you lose a couple old guys? And, you know, Austria is the same way. France is limited in women. Spain is women. England is women. Canada allows one filling in a child and up to four fillings in an adult. And, you know, it goes on and on. I could go around the world for you if you like. But, you know, it basically says, If you look at the manufacturer's material safety data sheet, this is the information that comes. This is what the court ruling was on Dr. Barnes, is that the material safety data sheet tells the dentist not to use it in pregnant women.
Why would you want to use it in pregnant women?
Because the mercury, well, the same reason I'm telling people not to have the mercury fillings drilled out willy-nilly, is that when you put a mercury filling in, the blood level of mercury in that person goes up through the ceiling. And that it only gradually comes down over the next 6 to 9 months.
Do you think the average dentist even realizes he shouldn't be putting it into a pregnant woman?
No, not at all. And matter of fact, I was taught in dental school to treat the pregnant woman in between 6 and 9 months of pregnancy. They say, oh, yeah, it's no problem at all. The heck it isn't. That's exactly when the brain is forming. The child is extremely vulnerable during that period of time. It's a ridiculous time to treat the child, treat the mother. And that you will give the baby a nice big bolus dose of mercury. I got a call just the other day from a lady who was very upset to discover that it most likely was her trip to the dentist during her latter stages of pregnancy that caused her child to be born with autism. And, you know, she had no idea that having a tooth fixed with a mercury filling would expose her fetus, who was in the womb at that time, to a huge dose of mercury. And, you know, that it says that in the package insert that comes to the dentist's office. He never told her. What happened to informed consent?
Well, of course, the Hebe didn't know, and this is the tragedy. They're intentionally not letting the dentist know, and then if there's a lawsuit, why, he's hung out to dry. But the difficulty is that there is no substance I know that is more toxic than mercury. So why are we putting it in the vaccines that we're giving our children? Mercury methylate, we used mercurochrome methylate, was so toxic, they banned it because you can't put it on the skin, it's too toxic. But it's all right to shoot it into the child and give them massive toxic doses with their vaccines. And now we've outlawed it in childhood vaccines here. But don't you worry, we're going to give it to those little black children all throughout the world. Well, you go right ahead, David.
Well, you got off on vaccines. Don't forget that your tetanus vaccine, your flu vaccine, and your Rogam, which is for Rh-negative mothers, all still contain large amounts of mercury. So they're still squirting these willy-nilly in the kids. My brother went in to get a flu vaccine. I don't recommend it, but, you know, nobody ever listens to me. So he went in to his doctor and said, you know, she said, you should have a flu shot, you know, this season. And he said, fine, I'll have one of those without mercury. And she said, they have mercury in them? And he said, yeah. She said, do they make one without? And he says, well, is that computer there on the desk connected to the Internet? And she said, yes. And in about 20 seconds, he said, yeah, you can get this brand here. But, you know.
The doctors really don't know. That's the tragedy.
She didn't have any idea. She didn't know. She said, that's what she said. Oh, it has mercury in it? And he said, yeah, it's a Marisol. She said, oh, that's mercury? You know, it's like, okay, fine. So, you know, they had a golf lesson during that class in medical school, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, the nurse, one of my patients told her, the pediatrician, she didn't want her children to have any shots with mercury. And the doctor said, we don't use any of that here. And she goes in and I told her, read the package. And so they went in and give the kid his little vaccination. And, the nurse was, you know, sucking up the vaccine and she said, is there any mercury in that? And she said, no, we don't use that in this office. And she said, can I see the package insert? And the nurse, kind of like Nurse Gherkin, says, well, okay. And she handed her the package insert, which actually is in every package. And she opened it up and looked at it for about 10 seconds. And she says, well, this has got Tamarisol in it. And the nurse said, well, it's just a little tiny bit. And went toward the kid with a needle, and she said, what are you going to do with that? I'm going to give him a shot. And she said, I said I won't want any mercury. And she says, well, it's just a little tiny bit. And she says, no, it's not. It's 250 micrograms. I don't want that in my kid. What is it about? No, you don't understand. So, you know, they don't get it. You know, the 250 micrograms is a huge dose to a small child.
And, of course, the thing is that many times, at least up until recently, they were giving us 6 or 8 different shots at the same time when they were coming in. And this is why there was such a tremendous increase in the incidence of autism. Now that it's been taken out of the childhood vaccines, there's starting to be a drop-off of the incidence of autism. And they cannot let the American people know the truth, because if you realize that 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental disability of one sort or another, is a direct result of public health policy and the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service, why, we wouldn't trust them anymore.
They even stuck a provision in the middle of the night, and nobody would claim that they had done it, in one of the military funding bills to exempt the drug companies for injury from the substances in the vaccine.
And so if there's nothing to worry about, why are they trying to put it in there?
Well, you know, their friends in the pharmaceutical industry who are making billions of dollars are very much afraid that they may be spending billions of dollars on attorneys, so they get their friends in Congress for, you know, a golf junket and a couple other things to put, laws in force to protect them from angry citizens who have discovered that the damage to the brains of their children was due to their negligence. And that's the word they don't like to hear, negligence. And so anyway, 1 out of 6 infants born in the United States have sufficient mercury in their umbilical cord blood to cause brain damage. Is that a huge figure or what? 1 out of 6, and that research has confirmed that 90%
of the mercury in the person's blood is from their children. Hold that thought right there, David. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and David was just saying that One in six children, when they measure the mercury level in the cord blood, the umbilical cord blood, one in six children born in America today has enough mercury to produce brain damage. Is that a correct quotation, David?
That's exactly correct, and I can give you the reference. And it came right out of the scientific literature. EPA, isn't that an agency, the United States federal government?
Well, that's the same one that told everybody it was all right to work on the pile in New York, the rubble of the World Trade Center. And I think there were over 400 people who worked there. 400 people who worked there. 400 people who worked there have cancer now. And, of course, so many of them have serious respiratory symptoms, and some have already died. Young, healthy people. But they were guaranteed by the EPA it was all right to go in, and they believed what the government told them.
They may have made a mistake, I guess, huh?
Well, let's get back to the subject at hand here. And, of course, this is really the terrible things that they're doing to the minds of our children. And when one in six American children has a nerve development abnormality, and the government has no idea why, but they assure you that it has nothing to do with the mercury in the vaccines. And now that, of course, they've taken out of the childhood vaccines, but they still want to give them the influenza shot starting at 6 months of age. They want to give the pregnant mother a shot during the first trimester of pregnancy when it'll do the most damage to the child. Why would they want to do that when they know the damage that mercury does to the minds of the children? And, of course, not only the minds, but to the fertility. It poisons so many aspects of the body. What does it do besides poison the mind and destroy the mind?
Basically, mercury is what's called a xenobiotic. It destroys every mental neurological process in the human being. It's linked to, I can't say causation because that would take some money to do research, and there is no money coming out of the government for research, but it's linked to multiple sclerosis, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, and infertility. And this is, and of course, autism that we've been talking about. So look at the commonality of those diseases. They all have to do with your brain. And so there was a program on National Geographic one time. It's called A Perfect Pesticide for Man. And it was all about how mercury accumulates in the brain of mankind and destroys your ability of your brain to grow and develop. And there's on our website, there's even a video of a brain neuron growing. And then we introduce mercury at a level that's 100 times lower than is in the cerebral spinal fluid of somebody's brain that's got a few, you know, a dozen fillings in their teeth, and that all of a sudden this nerve just dies and shrinks and turns into what's called a neurofibrillary tangle, which is one of the hallmark diagnostic signs of Alzheimer's disease. So we can actually create Alzheimer's disease in animals by putting making them inhale mercury. We tried by injecting mercury into them, didn't affect them. But when we had them inhale mercury, as in the form of mercury vapor, the form that comes off your teeth day in, day out, every moment of your life, if you've got fillings in your teeth, that's how we were able to create the damage to the brain that was characteristic of Alzheimer's disease. And so, you know, there's two or three studies of people with multiple sclerosis, and that, you know, things like muscle strength, they can show you taking it out, and all of a sudden the ability to squeeze a tensionometer and increases, and there's psychological things. Depression went away, on and on and on. The FDA held a hearing in September because of a wonderful group called Consumers for Dental Choice. Charlie Brown's the attorney, working on a shoestring budget. He's a former attorney general for West Virginia, and that he basically was able to force the FDA through a lawsuit into holding a hearing on the safety and effectiveness of a dental amalgam. Can you imagine, last 150 years, despite all the laws that we've passed, they've never, ever held their necessary hearings. And so the Susan Runner, who was the lady that put together the Dog and Pony Show for the Institute of Medicine, that said autism wasn't linked at all to vaccines because she wouldn't allow any input from anybody that disagreed with her, tried to put together exactly the same kind of what I call a Washington, D.C. dog and pony show in September 6th and 7th in Gaithersburg, Maryland. And that the only difference was the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, Mothers Against Mercury, and Charlie Brown got together and we got 50 scientists to show up and 50 injured people to show up and tell them that there was a problem with mercury fillings, and that the good news is the panel heard what we had to say. We got a 13-7 no vote on the safety of dental amalgam. So that's what the FDA is sitting on right now.
Yeah, because they're not going to do anything about it.
Oh, no. We couldn't possibly do anything.
I mean, they'll wait 5-10 more years, and how many people are going to contract Alzheimer's disease, or how many children are going to have permanent mental damage? In the meantime, until you understand there really are wicked and evil people out there, none of this really makes sense. Once you recognize that, everything begins to make sense. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. David Kennedy, and we're talking about the danger of dental amalgam in the mouth, and we're talking about, of course, the picture that you'll actually see if you get the video, and it's called The Smoking Tooth, and actually it's got interviews with other people, quite a very, very good video. How long is the video actually, David?
It's about 45 minutes long, and it's really... got a very nice introduction. So if your dentist is too busy to watch 45 minutes, you can have him watch the first 8 minutes, and he'll get an eyeful. And I tell people to buy, you know, bunches of these, because, you know, a lot of grandparents can't get the kids to listen to the thing, but you can give them a video, and hey, everybody's got a DVD player, and they'll stick it in and watch it. And it's a very tightly edited, clear, cogent description of the problem of mercury. And at the end of the video, there's even a demonstration on how it ought to look when you get your fillings taken out safely. And that, the biggest thing I'm concerned about, Stan, is that if everybody listens to your program, immediately runs out to the same dentist that put all these mercury fillings in, and the dentist doesn't change a thing about what he did, I can show you in the scientific literature or in their blood tests on them, is that when he goes to drill on those teeth, their blood level of mercury goes up to the ceiling, and that can totally be prevented. If I went and fired a gun at you and nicked your arm, that would be an assault with a deadly weapon. Is that if I take a mercury thermometer, put it in a spoon and heat it up, I'll kill myself and everybody in the room. And so mercury vapor is a heck of a lot more toxic than a bullet out of a gun. And because I can kill everybody in that entire room with a teaspoon of mercury. You can pack that room with 1,000 people. I can kill them all with a thermometer full of mercury. You were absolutely correct when you said mercury is one of the most toxic substances known to mankind. And yet, we've got this stuff leaking out of every filling we've ever done. But what makes it leak more is when that drill gets on there. When they take that drill and start grinding on that filling, is that a little tiny aerosol of mercury particles comes off that can be inhaled, just like cigarette smoke. Some of these are smaller than cigarette smoke. But when you get them down in your lungs, they get lodged in there, and they stay there for the rest of your life. And people say, well, you know, dentists are exposed to this too. And that's absolutely correct. And I will show you, that's what my lectures were about in the 80s, about the injury to dental personnel. You know, they got a 40% decrease in their fertility rate. You measure their neurological impairment. There's studies by Posian and Echevarria showing that dentists are neurologically impaired. You can even
hold that thought right there, David. Yep. I want to bring our other stations back on board right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, Dr. Kennedy is simply pointing out that the dentists who are putting in these mercury fillings are injuring themselves. There's a significant... What's the decrease in fertility among dentists and among those women who work in dental offices close to the mercury?
Among the females, the female dentist and the female dental assistant, there's a 40% decline in their ability to conceive a child. And this was by Roland, a study in the early 90s, that they measured everything. They determined, they paired social equal, they made sure that there was, you know, they measured smoking, they measured alcohol consumption, the frequency of intercourse, they measured every single conceivable factor in whether or not this woman would or would not conceive it. And the most significant factor was whether she worked in a dental office that used mercury or not. and that both the dental assistants and the dentists have been shown to be one. The ADA did a study years ago where they surveyed the dentists, and that they basically said they lost all the data on the female dentist. They had a 70% response, which is an excellent response, and that they've never reported on the data on female dentists. And they reported on the male dentist and said, see, no problem. Well, you know, infertility in male dentists is due to a damaged sperm. So you're not going to have a birth defect child if the sperm is so damaged it can't get to the egg. So, you know, that's not where you look for it. So, you know, I call it looking for mercury in all the wrong places. They just did a terrible study. They should be ashamed of themselves, where they took children who were in an orphanage in Portugal, put mercury fillings in their teeth, measured the amount of mercury coming out in their urine, which is like the wrong place to look, and they showed that the more fillings they put in for the first 3 years, the more mercury came out. And after the first 3 years, during the next 5 years, the amount of mercury, although they kept putting more and more fillings in these children's teeth, the amount of mercury coming out went down, down, down. We did that same experiment in sheep. We were back in 1987 and 89 and showed that if you put mercury fillings in sheep, the amount of mercury coming out decreases because the kidney loses its ability to excrete mercury. That study alone proved that they're damaging the health of those children's kidneys. And, the, you know, that it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and it claimed to say that there was no problem. Well, look at your own graph. You're damaging the children's kidneys. Don't you read your own research?
And of course, the interesting thing is that they look at the mercury in the hair, and they say, "Look, there's no mercury in the hair, so there's not a problem." The problem is that if there's no mercury in the hair, it means the child can't excrete the mercury, and it's accumulating in their brain. And in the autistic children don't have any mercury in their hair. Normal children who are able to excrete it do have mercury in the hair. It's just the opposite from what people would think, isn't it?
Yeah, it, when you're looking at the exit. Think of it like the stadium where the football game is on, and you're standing at the exit, and you see one person wandering out, and then another person wandering out. Well, that's fine if it happens to be on Saturday and there's no game today, but what if the stadium is chock full and there's only one person wandering out? It's going to take you forever to empty that stadium. The hair is an exit, and so the children that have you know that it's a game day. You know that child's been exposed to mercury. And there's nobody coming out the exit. What's that tell you? Is the mercury still inside the kid? And this is the baby's first haircut study that was done by Boyd Haley and Amy Holmes. And they showed that the amount of mercury in children's hair is proportional to the number of fillings in the mother's teeth if it's a healthy baby. If it has autism, there was almost no mercury in any of the children's hair, despite the number of fillings in the mother's teeth. The mother could have 50 fillings. And there was almost no mercury in the baby's hair. What's that tell you? That stadium is full of mercury. There's nothing coming out.
Well, let's quickly talk about getting the mercury out, because, you know, I actually had one woman who wanted to come on to our program and talk about it. She had her mercury fillings taken out, and she got such a jolt and a bolus of mercury toxicity that her health has never been the same again. So if it's done properly, there's nothing to worry about. If it's done improperly,
where
you get
about
mercury toxicity, how should it be done, and where can people learn how to get it done? We've got Mike Carey hanging on from Arizona. Mike's a doctor down there, but we'll go ahead and take him in just a minute. But before we do that, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get their fillings taken out safely, because if they're done by the average doctor, he really doesn't know how to do it. He thinks he does, but he doesn't understand the toxicity, because he doesn't believe mercury is toxic. And he's exposing not only the patient, but himself and his assistant to serious consequences.
There is a patient protection protocol that's on the back end of the smoking teeth video, Stan, that you have. It describes in detail exactly what should happen. But let me summarize it for your listeners. And two, let them know if they want to go on the Internet, they can actually read it. You can download it off the website or read it on the website of the International Academy for Oral Medicine Toxicology. But basically what you have to do is you have to isolate the tooth from the patient's breathing. You can't inhale this stuff. It's extremely toxic. So you got to put pack the mouth full of cotton or put a rubber dam over the tooth, something so the patient can't breathe around their tooth. And then you give the patient a nose hose so that they can breathe fresh air or oxygen and not breathe the fumes around the tooth while the work is going on. And then you put a giant vacuum right next to the tooth, and one that if you were smoking a cigar, that your mother couldn't smell it right next to you. And then you take your assistant, and she takes a water spray and puts a hose on your tooth, like, you know, a garden hose, and you turn the water way up on the handpiece, and then you just cut very quickly with a burr, not a diamond, a burr, cut the filling in half, and take it out in two pieces. Then you put that in a hazardous waste container, which is required by law, and you collect all the little particles that came off when you did that, and collect them, vacuum them up, and separate them from the sewage, put them in a hazardous waste container, and send them off to the hazardous waste recycler, clean the mouth up, and then you can go ahead and fix the tooth any way you like. But that's the protocol, and it's called the Patient and Staff Protection Protocol. And the staff, at the same time, are also wearing a mercury filter mask. It's required by OSHA. OSHA does not inspect offices that have less than 10 employees unless there's an employee there that complains and is still employed. And so, you know, most dentists don't comply. But the law is there. And so break the law at your own peril. It's just like speeding without any highway patrolman. You know, the laws are there for our protection.
All right. Well, anyway, I think what's so interesting is, you know, this is considered hazardous waste and have to put it in a special container and take it to a special place to be disposed of. But it's all right to put it in your mouth. Let's go back here. And incidentally, if you want to learn how to do it, you go to the website www.IIIAOMT, International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology.com. Is that com or org?
Either one. Org is what the normal one.
All right, fine. And go there, and you can get the name of a dentist in your area who knows how to get the mercury out. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Arizona. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah. Hi, Stan. You really anticipated one of my questions. I'm curious, have either of you had this done?
Yes, I've had it done.
I had 13 fillings removed. I took them out of my dad. Nobody in my family or my office staff for the last 25 years has had any mercury fillings, because that's one of the fringe benefits of working for Dr. Kennedy. If I saw that stuff, I took it out.
And I will tell you, Mike, I had mine done by a very, very good dentist who had all the things that, you know, you would anticipate you would use. And you know, I was feeling really great until suddenly he took this dam out of this inflatable dam out of the back of my throat. And I got this bolus of mercury. And you know, you just suddenly your head begins to spin and your heart begins to beat. And, you know, I've recovered from it, fortunately. But I hate to think what would happen if he hadn't done it right. So, yes, right. I think it's a very important thing to do. And if you have them, Mike, I hope you'll get them out.
I have a mouthful of them. Is this something that can be done in one sitting?
I don't recommend that, and I'll tell you why. Is it if you're going to go swimming and you weren't sure there are sharks in the water, you wouldn't want to have the whole class jump in at one time. You just put one kid in. And see if he gets eaten. If you're severely injured by mercury already, and that, you know, there's probably a suspicion, and I know people that are very sensitive to mercury, and I tell them, you know, put your toe in the water. Don't put your whole body in there. And so what you do is you do the very best protocol you can follow, and take one filling out. And then if that doesn't make you sick, then you can take a few more. But you know that it doesn't make any sense that if you're potentially mercury poisoned, to go give you a big dose of mercury. And I'll tell you why. Back in 1957, sign up for this experiment. Frickholm, who was a dentist in Sweden, did an experiment where they put radioactive mercury fillings in 7 people's teeth. And then they watched the radiation spread throughout their body and come out in their urine for the next 6 weeks. And they said, yeah, see, that's really wonderful. The radiation comes from the teeth out to the urinary bladder in just a few days. They didn't measure the stool. There was a ton of it in the stool, too. We did it in sheep. It's more appropriate to use sheep. But of the 7 people, 6 of them went and had their fillings removed. The 7th one was a volunteer, and he was going to have a denture made, and he went and had his teeth extracted. All 7 of the experimental subjects, after they had their fillings out, began to run much more radiation out through their urine. And the urine's not the appropriate way to look for mercury, but what that shows was that even the guy that had his teeth pulled got a bolus dose of mercury. And just from taking a hold of that tooth and wobbling a little bit and pulling it out. And so there, you know, you're the physician. There are physicians that I particularly like, the ACAM and American Academy of Environmental Medicine, that they will basically preload you and protect you with mercury chelating agents so that when that, if you do get a bolus dose or a small dose of mercury, it sucks it out of your bloodstream before it has a chance to accumulate in your brain and kidneys. And that's not a dental procedure. That's a medical procedure. And that, you know, that there's the state of California jerked a guy's license here in California that was trying to protect his patients, saying, no, he's practicing medicine without a license, which makes me say dentists can only poison patients. Is if we try not to poison them, then we're overstepping the boundaries of our license. We can only poison them. Sorry.
Well, Mike, we've got some excellent four-tape sets on this. We've got couple of excellent videos on this, or you can even go to Dr. Kennedy's website, and you can see the smoking tooth. And, of course, if you want to hear the interviews with Dr. Boyd Haley, professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky, and he goes into the experiments he's done, and there's no question in my mind there's a causal relationship between dental fillings, dental amalgam, and the incidence of Alzheimer's disease, because the people with Alzheimer's disease have a much higher level of mercury in their brains than the average normal person would. Anything else, Mike?
Yeah, let me ask you, the fact that the mercury is alloyed with another metal, and I don't know what that metal is that not protective?
It's actually not an alloy. Technically, what it's called is a solid gel. It's alloyed or mixed with, it's actually a mixture of silver, copper, zinc, and tin. And it's 50% mercury, more or less, give or take a percentage point, 35% silver, up to 12-14% copper, and then some zinc and tin, and copper, you know, they vary around the ingredients depending on the manufacturer. But what the smoking teeth will show you, and that is that if you take this product, which is, like if you take stainless steel, which is a mixture of nickel and iron, and squeeze it, no nickel comes out, because that's a true metal alloy. If you take an amalgam, and there's a wonderful photograph, it's actually on the webpage that James Mozzie did. He took a probe and touched a 25-year-old amalgam at 1 pound per square inch, which is, you know, like your finger against your nose. It's nothing. And that there are little droplets of mercury on the surface. And so it's like a mixture of sand and water. Is it, you can build a sandcastle with that. But if you squeeze it, the water comes to the surface. And that's
basically
exactly
just
what
kind
happened.
Of an emulsion.
It's a solid emulsion, sure, exactly. It's not an alloy. And so they're called silver amalgam fillings, and that is a term of deception. They did a survey in the Zogby poll and did a survey of the public, and 76% of the public did not realize that a silver filling technically was more than 50% mercury, and most of them did not even realize there was any mercury in it. And so the lie is out. The dentists have been telling people for years, you've got silver, oh, I'll just put silver fillings in your teeth. They're not silver, they're mercury. And that the laws of your state and our state, that if you're going to make a breakfast cereal that's 51% oats, you can't call it wheat toasties. You've got to call it oat toasties. And so if you're going to put a mercury filling in somebody's tooth, you've got to call it a mercury filling. You can't couldn't call it a copper filling because it had 12% copper. That's ridiculous. You've got to call it a mercury filling.
And of course, it has to be handled as a hazardous waste, but it's all right to put it in your mouth. Anything else, Mike?
Yeah, one last thing. Not to get too technical, but the blood-brain barrier is normally a pretty good system that we all have in place that protects the brain from things that shouldn't be, you know, that the brain shouldn't be exposed to. Is it not adequate when it comes to mercury ions?
Well, actually, that's, you're correct in saying that it keeps ions out. Is it the way the blood-brain barrier works? It's a fat-soluble membrane, and it lets uncharged particles through, but not charged particles. And so there's an enzyme in your bloodstream called catalase. And so if you inhale mercury vapor, which is mercury HG0, it's uncharged particle, and it circulates around in your bloodstream, that the enzyme catalase grabs this and puts a plus charge on it, plus or plus plus charge on it, and that does not cross the blood-brain barrier. Unfortunately, mercury vapor, HG0, is one of the most toxic forms of mercury because it readily crosses the blood-brain barrier. Inside the blood-brain barrier is your brain. There also exists the enzyme catalase. So once that mercury gets inside the blood-brain barrier, it gets a charge applied to it and becomes mercury plus or plus plus. It can't exit the blood-brain barrier. So now we have a one-way street that lets the uncharged mercury vapor in, but the enzyme catalase charging this particle won't let it back out. And herein is where the whole thing about the genotype called APOE234, and I don't want to get too technical for the listeners, and send me an email and I'll send you my write-up for the FDA, but basically APOE234, the twos don't get Alzheimer's because they have an excellent excretion system of mercury with any amount of charge from the brain. It's supposed to carry cholesterol out, but the way it hooks onto the cholesterol with sulfur. Sulfur grabs mercury before it'll grab cholesterol, so boom, they get rid of it. And the fours don't have any way to get mercury out of their brain. So you're thinking along the right way. That's exactly what we've done for the last 20 years. Your questions are very astute.
All right, we're going to have to let you go, Mike, because we've got another mic. Hi, Mike, did you have a question?
Yeah, question. I wondered if mercury is destructive, at least in part, because of its electrical conductive nature, thereby shorting out components of the nervous system.
Now, do you think is it toxic because of its electric nature, or is it toxic simply because it's mercury, and because mercury has a tremendous affinity for doing damage to the neurological system?
Well, doing damage because of its electrical conductive nature.
All right, did you have that?
Well,
yeah, Sweden looked at that, and that they could not find any good evidence that was true. On the other hand, if you measure the voltage on your teeth, the supposedly the fillings that are leaking the most mercury are the ones that have the highest negative charge, and that makes sense. You know, like your battery in your car, the lead zinc battery, you know, the one with the most negative charge is the one that's losing the most ions, so that makes sense, you know, electrically. But mercury does short out the nerves in the brain, but it does it by eating up the myelin sheath. So it's like taking off the insulation off your wiring. It doesn't make your house work very good.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Mike, and of course... Right now, our guest has been Dr. David Kennedy. The DVD we're talking about is called The Smoking Truth. The Smoking Truth. His other one on fluoride is Let the Truth Be Told. They're both available from Radio Liberty, and we'll tell you how to get in a moment. Well, David, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, let me wrap it up by encouraging all of your listeners to take steps to protect their health, and then also protect our nation. And then there's ways that we can do this. The FDA will drop the ball on this unless citizens keep the pressure on their elected officials. The people don't like to be... people think, I don't amount to anything. I'll tell you what. In Washington, if they get a lot of letters and emails and whatever, faxes from their citizens, they may ignore it. They start to pay attention. And that's what I would encourage you all to do, is figure out who represents you in your community, and send them a letter saying, I heard a program about the FDA trying to cover up the problem of concerned about that. And so the FDA had a hearing in September of this year, and we got a 13-7 no vote saying that the FDA white paper was not objective. It did not clearly discuss the state of the art about mercury exposure from fillings, and that it was not reasonable to conclude that the fillings were safe. So, you know, but this panel was dissolved after that meeting, and the FDA plans to hold no more hearings. So, you know, unless we hold our feet to the fire, they're going to let this all slide by the wayside.
And they're going to continue poisoning our adults, and you'll see more and more people in nursing homes with that blank, helpless look on their face of Alzheimer's. And, of course, they continue damaging our children, and not only giving them mercury, a latent influenza vaccine, but certainly the tetanus toxoid and other vaccines. They want to have all sorts of vaccines, and so many of them are laden with thimerosal. Oh, we've taken out of the childhood vaccines, but we've left it in the other vaccines. Why would you do that if mercury is toxic? And why would you insist on giving it to six-month-old children and women in the first trimester of the pregnancy? Really doesn't make sense unless, of course, there's another agenda. Our guest this afternoon has been Dr. David Kennedy. His website, David, what is your website? How they can get hold of your website?
www.iaomt.org. And it's the International Academy of Oral Medicine Toxicology. I've got a phone number for you, 863-420-6373. And so give us a call or stop by the website, download the protocols, and step up and help protect our country from this terrible intrusion into our health with the xenobiotics implanted in children and adult teeth.
And, of course, we also carry Dr. David Kennedy's a book on how to save your teeth. That's how to save your teeth, and of course it deals with getting rid of the infection that's in your mouth, and certainly it's the bacteria that creates the cavities. Nobody tells you that. We'll be right back. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, Ken.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Dr. Kennedy has actually written a book, which we do carry. It's called How to Save Your Teeth. It's available through Radio Liberty. We carry his video, I should say his DVD. First of all, of course, the Smoking Tooth, and this deals with mercury. We have two of his DVDs dealing with fluoride. One is called Let the Truth Be Told, and that's about 2 hours long, and it's divided into four interviews, each one are 28 and a half minutes, so you can show it on cable TV, an excellent means of getting this information out. And of course, he has another one, is Your Drinking Water Safe? They're all available from Radio Liberty, three DVDs, one on mercury, and then of course two on water fluoridation. We of course have another DVD which we carry on the issue of mercury, and it's called Without Informed Consent. That's Without Informed Consent. And certainly you'll see the smoking tooth on all of these. You need to get the information. You need to get it to protect yourself, and you need to inform your doctor and your dentist. They really don't know. They're good people. But if you don't tell them, who's going to? And if you don't do it now, how many more people are they going to damage and hurt? And the average dentist, the average doctor would never intentionally hurt anybody. Do you know what profession has one of the highest suicide levels? Why, it occurs in dentistry. Why? Because mercury damages the mind. You ever heard the expression, mad as a hatter? Why were hatters mad? Because they work with mercury all the time. And nobody wants to address these issues today. Well, we have so much here at Radio Liberty. If you've never read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you've never read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, I spent 10 years trying to stop the AIDS epidemic. Nothing that happened made any sense. If you read my book, you'll get my frustration, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. It was only after 10 years I suddenly realized the reason we're not trying to stop the epidemic is there are people who don't want to stop this epidemic. It's being used for population control, and it's specifically targeting the blacks in our neighborhood, in our nation. Here in the United States, over half of the new AIDS cases are in blacks. You think that's happening just by accident? We have wrote an article, actually, American Physicians, Journal of Physicians and Surgeons, would be glad to send it to you if you'd like, pointing out that there is genetic differences between black and white, and white people are genetically aberrant. In other words, we don't have a full set of the genes that blacks do, and because they have both of these specific genes, they're much more susceptible to the HIV infection. I believe this disease, as with so many other things, is specifically designed to attack the black race. And we have to be involved and point out what's going on. The same thing with water fluoridation. It raises the level of lead in the blood. Now, why would water fluoridation raise the level of lead in the blood? Well, that's another whole program, but let me point out that it doubles the incidence of lead in the blood if you drink fluoridated water and you're white. But if you're black, it increases the level of blood six times, and this leads to rage and mental deficiency and, of course, irrational behavior. And I believe this plays a large part in the reason why one in every three young black men is either in prison or parole or probation, and why we have today the highest rate per capita of people in prisons of any nation in the world. That's right, the highest rate per 100,000 of any nation in the world. Much higher than they have in China, much higher than they have in the Soviet Union. Stop and understand, ladies and gentlemen, we're losing our country because the good people aren't involved. How do you understand what's going on? You read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's a good place to start, or watch the DVD or video. The Brotherhood of Darkness. Why, of course, you read the book Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, or get the Malachi Martin special with the interviews with Dr. Martin. And then, of course, probably you'd want to get my three pamphlet set, The Occult Hierarchy, because behind all the things going on are powerful spiritual forces. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
On the Information Radio Network, I'm Laura Lee Schultz. Authorities in Oregon say the body of James Kim has been found. They'd been searching for the San Francisco man whose wife and two young daughters were found safe Monday in the car in which they'd been stranded for more than a week. His wife said Kim had set out on Saturday searching for help. President Bush has his copy of the Iraq Study Group's report and promised to take its recommendations seriously.
Headlining the recommendations is a call to begin withdrawing U.S. combat troops responsibly and to commence a new diplomatic effort lest an already grave situation in Iraq deteriorate further. Receiving the report at a White House meeting with panel members, the president acknowledged the language is tough, but said it may point a way forward.
This report will give us all an opportunity.